Tonight, it's a new episode of All Rise, the legal drama where one judge is shaking up the system.
When I take the bench, I'm taking a vow to fight for justice.
One case at a time.
Your Honor,
we're going to trial.
Simone Missick is Judge Lola Carmichael.
Up on that bench. Everything is different.
A new episode of All Rise.
Freedom is at stake.
It's important.
Followed by a new episode of Bull, tonight at 9, 8 central on CBS.
Tonight, it's the CBS original comedy, The Neighborhood.
I need at least a month to prepare for a debate, not 6 hours.
Actually, it's 4 hours.
No, my watch is broken, too.
With Cedric the Entertainer, Max Greenfield, and guest star Wayne Brady.
You gotta fund the schools or graduate fools.
You stole all my lines.
Look, don't worry, I got a plan.
Okay, well, what is it?
Okay, so I don't have a plan.
A new episode of The Neighborhood.
You're gonna have to give them a show.
Tonight, 8, 7 central on CBS.
It's time for fatness to meet fitness.
Hold on to your butt.
The common man and the thinking man.
They were so convincing in their argument, they swung me.
The avocado and the great bravado.
I want it. It's everything.
Nick Wilson and Josh Parcell.
I assume you know who we are.
Are Woo! Wilson and Parcell.
Charlotte, welcome into Wilson and Parcell. I'm Nick Wilson. He's Josh Parcell. We got Hacky across the board. What's up, Joshy?
What is up? Happy Thursday.
Happy lottery day.
Yes, lottery day. The day that Hornets fans have come to absolutely hate.
Oh, you know what? I don't want to give it away right now. I have a good feeling about tonight. I might even pick up a few scratch-offs on the way home. That's how good I'm feeling about today.
Yeah, but if you win the lottery, then the Hornets are not going to win the lottery. Okay, we can't have too many good things in one day.
No,
I'm staying as far away from the lottery as possible. No Powerball for me, no scratch-offs. I want all the good luck. I want James Borrego to have it. He can do it for one night. Let's see if Charlotte can move up in the lottery for the first time ever.
If Cleveland and the Cleveland Cavaliers have taught me anything, you can catch lottery fever. Like if you look at the 2000 from that 2011 draft on, they got the number one pick three times in 4 years. That's how you do it. So actually, me winning the lottery would then only help the Hornets win the lottery because it's very contagious, although not contagious. Some other things, Hacksaw.
So I think I kind of get Josh's point here. So we should have as much bad luck as possible so we can give all the good luck to the Hornets tonight. So let's go get some ladders. Let's go get some mirrors.
We do have
black
kitty that is outside the building
here. Let's
cross
its path.
Let's follow him. Let's trail him for
that
matter.
Let's get a bunch of salt shakers and just throw them on its side. Let the salt go out on it and everything. Let's do all the bad luck we can.
So from the team that some wanted, like me and Josh, some wanted to tank and didn't and has a chance at the number one pick. If the USA Today projection series by Nate Davis is any real consideration here, if it's any merit in truth eventually, the Panthers are going to be looking pretty good with that number one pick this next year, as Nate Davis has the Panthers going 2-14. He also had the New York Giants going 2-14, but obviously this would leave the Panthers with either the first or second pick. I threw this out on Twitter, and I got some pretty interesting responses, Josh, so I'll let you finish the sentence first. The Carolina Panthers go 2-14 in 2020 if, finish the sentence.
We flatten the curve, and there's a season. Yeah, I mean, that's what I picked when the schedule came out. I think this is a team that is probably going to win around two or three games, maybe four. I've said it until I'm blue in the face that I think that this schedule is the reason why the Panthers won't win a lot of games. I think if they had a more manageable schedule, they played an easier division. I mean, you're playing the NFC North, and the NFC North has, I think, four teams that feasibly could make the playoffs. Now, the Bears are further out than I mean, they're the worst team in that division. Don't get me wrong. But if Trubisky reverts back to what he was 2 years ago, I still think the Bears are good enough to at least be roughly 500, which is more than you can say for the fourth best team in some other divisions. I think Detroit's going to be much improved. They were already, I would say, a 500 type team, maybe slightly above if Stafford was healthy last year. So he's back. They've improved the secondary. I think that the Lions, and they've improved the linebackers as well. So I think the Lions could be. And then the Vikings and the Packers, we know, are playoff threats. So you're playing the NFC North. You're playing the Kansas City Chiefs. There's only two games on the schedule that look like really easy-ish type games, and that's the home game against Detroit, their favorite, which I wouldn't favor them in that game, but there's two games on the schedule. They're favored in Vegas right now. So it's not exactly a bold, outlandish prediction for Nate, the guy who wrote this piece for USA Today, to pick them to go 2-14. That's quite possible.
Yeah, his methodology, a little bit different than the ceiling and floor discussion yesterday. That was based off simulations. What Nate Davis actually did in this, which, kudos to him. I don't know who has this much time or the sanity to do this. He actually went through every single game in the NFL and predicted each one of those games. I hear what you're saying. I don't think 2-14 is the most likely thing, though. I mean, I look at this team, and I do think, you know, games like Las Vegas are there's a chance there week one. The Chicago game week six, if Mitch Trubisky's still the quarterback. I don't even think Arizona in week four is necessarily a slam dunk. Kyler Murray probably going to have some fun against this defense, but again, that's not a very good Arizona team defensively or just even around him. They're still getting better despite adding Nuke Hopkins. I think for the Panthers to go 2-14, I do think some things have to go wrong. Some of them already have. We know about the offseason. I think that is going to be one of the more damaging things that we look back on and talk about what that cost this team. I would also say, though, I think for them to go I think Teddy Bridgewater's a good enough quarterback that they shouldn't go 2-14, just as we look at the schedule on paper. Teddy, to me, is either going to have to disappoint or not be able to play all 16 games for this team to be the absolute worst team in the NFL.
I mean, I think Teddy could still play pretty well and this team lose a lot of games. I'm not 14 putting this on
losses,
Teddy.
14 losses is a lot for a guy if he's your starting quarterback for 14 games. Or sorry, 16 games.
This defense is going to give up a lot of points. I don't know, unless Dante Jackson just magically stops missing tackles and calling out coaches and doing the things that he's done for the last 2 years, unless Eli Apple stops committing pass interference penalties every other quarter, unless a group of linebackers that's largely unproven outside of Shaq Thompson, who has his own flaws in his own right, can be better than what it was a year ago with one of the best middle linebackers in the last generation of football. I just think this defense is going to lose them a lot of games. I love the offense. You know me. I've been saying it for 5 hours a day every afternoon for the last couple weeks. I think Teddy Bridgewater is a very good quarterback. And I think if the Panthers are patient enough to build around him, they don't need to panic this year if they lose a lot of games, because I think Teddy can be very good. But and obviously McCaffrey's great. I think DJ Moore and Curtis Samuel and Robbie Anderson, you got the makings of really good skill positions, but you have an unreliable offensive line outside of the tackle positions, and you have an unproven tight end who I think could be pretty good, but unproven. You have, I would say, one of the worst special teams in the NFL as well, which does matter to some degree, and the defense is, on paper, the worst in football. This offense could score 24 points a game and lose 14 games. That's how bad this defense is going up against the opponents that they're going to have to face. I mean, virtually every quarterback that they're going up against is, not every, you know what I mean? I'm exaggerating here, but a lot of the quarterbacks they're going up against are star quarterbacks. I mean, great, great players and great offenses. So it's not so much, I hate to sound like I'm trashing the entire Panthers roster. I'm not. I actually think this offense is probably better than most people around the league want to give it credit for. But you've got to be able to stop somebody. And history tells us in the NFL, when you have a defense that's this unproven and could potentially be this bad, if they are, you're going to lose a lot of games. And I think 13, 14 losses is on the table, regardless of how good the offense is.
I don't think anyone is sitting here doubting that the Panthers are going to be bad. But 2-14 isn't bad. 2-14 is awful. And to me, when I think about the Panthers, if the defense isn't one of the three worst defenses in the NFL, and if the offensive line, maybe it's just average, right? They don't have to be great. If they're just average and give Teddy enough time, that to me is a 4-5-6 win team. That's not the number one pick. And I think if you look back, even in the last 5 years, you know, Cincinnati had Andy Dalton. And if you watch Andy Dalton last year, he wasn't a very good quarterback. Andy Dalton led to The Bengals getting the number one pick. Josh Rosen in 2018 led to Kyler Murray. DeShone Kizer led to Baker Mayfield. I can't remember the slap ass in Cleveland before DeShone Kizer, but I can assure you he's a slappy. And then Case Keenum, before he kind of became decent, really led you to getting the number one pick for the Rams. So none of those guys are very good. Like, the best of the guys that I just mentioned is Case Keenum, and he didn't really become an acceptable player in the NFL as a starter until Minnesota, which was a few years later. So I look at this and I say the quarterback is a big piece. In terms of the quarterback going wrong is a big piece for the Panthers. That's why, to me, it comes down to Teddy either not being able to play all 16 games or the lesser version of Teddy Bridgewater coming out as he has to try and be more for the Carolina Panthers.
Yeah, we'll see. I mean, I think if you look at most teams in the NFL, most of them feel okay about their quarterback spot. It's kind of, you have to look around the rest of the league too. So the one team that I think has the worst situation in the NFL at quarterback, and I actually think this is arguable, but it's the Jacksonville Jaguars with Gardner Minshew, because Minshew had a stretch last season where he played well, and by and large is still very unproven. He's a late round pick. He struggled once teams started to have more tape on the guy. He wasn't quite the same player he was when everybody was going nuts over his mustache and his outfits and stuff. But outside of that, you know, I think Washington has a very shaky quarterback situation. I think it's worse than the one in Carolina. That's why I think Washington is very much in the thick of the race for the number one pick in the draft. I think the Giants have an okay quarterback situation. Daniel Jones turned it over and fumbled the ball a lot last season, but as a rookie, I'm going to give him a little bit of a pass and say, all right, let's see what you have in year two. But again, I think a worse player than what the Panthers have at quarterback. But the schedules that those teams are facing in the NFCs, first of all, the Giants and Washington play one another. So one of them is going to win at least one game. That one of them might win two. So right there, there's two wins potentially off the board that the Panthers don't have the good fortune of getting, because, well, they play in a division where Atlanta is a team that I believe is at least a threat to make the playoffs, and that's the next worst team in your division. So it's not just about looking at the roster, because if I looked at this roster, I don't think it's the worst in the NFL. Because I think the offense is good enough to make up for some of the shortcomings they have on defense. You know, I've seen a lot of power rankings that have been put out over the last couple of months with the Panthers, and most of those rankings are about right. They have Carolina 29th, maybe 30th. They're not, they're still bottom five, but I don't think they're 32. But then when you add into the fact that they've got the schedule, they've got, find me the five wins is what I would ask you. And I know that this league changes, but it's very difficult for me to sit here today and look at that schedule and go, here are the five games the Panthers are going to win. I don't see it.
With USA Today predicting the Panthers to go 2-14 here, I actually think, the more you and I talk, I actually think the defense is going to bring out the worst iteration of Teddy Bridgewater, and I think that's what's going to lead to 2-14. And the reason why I say that, it's not just he's going to have to throw from behind. Teddy Bridgewater last year was like the best quarterback in the NFL off play action pass. He was phenomenal in the play action. And this year, if that defense is as bad as we think it's going to be, Teddy's not going to have a lot of opportunities in play action, because they're not going to be able to sell the run consistently in the second half, because he's going to have to throw more. And while he was really good in the play action last year, his quarterback rating not in play action was 60.1. And unfortunately, I think that's the guy who's not going to be able to just rely on play action, because he's going to have to throw more out and people are going to understand he's going to have to throw more. I think that's going to bring out the worst iteration of Teddy Bridgewater. I hope I'm wrong, but that's my ultimate fear. And when I say fear, I mean the worst visualization I can think of the Carolina Panthers this year.
Yeah, and it's possible. And that's, you know, goes back to something we talked about with Teddy a lot too, is I do not expect this season to be the best year of Teddy Bridgewater's career to this point. I do not know that he'll be better than he was in 2015 in Minnesota, when he was fine. I mean, he wasn't amazing, but he was good that season. I think he was pretty good. I don't think he'll be better than he was that season. I certainly don't think he'll be better than he was last year when he was playing in New Orleans with a defense that gave him leads, gave him short fields, and an offense that, when fully loaded, is better than the Panthers, although not by much. this season is not going to be a year where Teddy Bridgewater sets the world on fire, resets our perception of Teddy, and all of a sudden we view him as a top 12 quarterback in this league. Where Teddy can thrive is down the road in better circumstances. But I do think that this year there could be times where Teddy Bridgewater might falter, which makes me even more convinced that the Panthers would lose games. I just think even if Teddy does play well, I don't think this team is built to win a lot. That's not Teddy's fault. That's more about the team around him.
Allow me to give the Charlotte the most lukewarm take ever. If Teddy Bridgewater goes 2-14, he ain't going to be the starting quarterback 2 years from now. He might not even be the starting quarterback next year. It all depends on what that number one pick gets them. Whether that number one pick is ready to start at quarterback for the Carolina Panthers next year. We've got USA Today saying that the Panthers will go 2-14 in 2020. So fill in the blank here. The Panthers go 2-14 if... Finish that sentence. We'll take some of your responses here on the Building Center text line or on the Diamonds Direct Twitter feed as well. It's probably more positive for Matt Rhule than you or I realize. Sports Radio FNZ.
Basically, Matt Rhule has done what everybody else does. He's took this team to the dentist. He's gotten rid of the things that have slowed this team down. And I'm not talking about players. I'm talking about systematically saying, what do we see as a Carolina Panther? What qualities do we want? And he asked for the input of all his coaches, the pro side, the college side, to know what is a Carolina Panther standard. And went through the whole organization and asked everyone, and then they put it on paper and said, this is how we're going to draft. I like that he's coming in there. And when I say cleaning it out, just meaning getting rid of the cubicles and having these desks all linked up together and doing it like a board meeting room and making sure that every investment they have is going to help the team.
Sports Radio FNZ, that was Steve Smith on the Clubhouse yesterday giving his thoughts on the initial run here with Matt Rhule. And Josh, I don't think 2-14 is the worst thing that could happen to Matt Rhule. I really don't.
Well, I mean, it's happened before. He's had worse seasons his first time around at Temple and first time at Baylor. This is what he does. This is the other reason why I think a 2-14 season or a 3-13 year, like I guarantee you that Dave Tepper is prepared for that. I guarantee you that the ownership in Carolina knew what might happen this coming season. Maybe they didn't know Luke Kuechly was going to retire, but they had a feeling what was going to happen with Cam Newton. They knew what they were up against, so they went out and got the guy who's been as good as anybody at taking a team like that and turning them into winners. So, yeah, I think Matt Rhule would be fine with that.
Well, yeah. I don't know about fine, but
he'd be confident moving forward.
I also think the other reason why it might be not, I wouldn't go best because, you know, that 2-14 is never a best case scenario, but it's better to me than going 4-12, having severe doubts about Teddy after this year, if he's part of the big part of the reasons why you went 4-12, and be no closer to answering the quarterback position in Carolina. The one thing I hope Teddy's good enough that they're, to me, the two best scenarios are either Teddy's good enough that at the end of this year we say, man, if you get that guy an offensive line and shore up that defense, we're going to have a nice run here. Whether that's 6-10, 8-8, don't give a damn on the record because they're not going to the playoffs. And if that happens, it's a miracle and we're going to, you know, make Matt Rhule a saint. I don't mean a literal saint. You guys know what I mean. I mean the Catholic Church saint. But so that's one of the best case scenarios. The other is you go through the season and at the end of it, you're able to pick your long-term franchise quarterback so that in one way or another, the long-term quarterback position is truly answered and secured here. Because the longer this goes on, the more of a danger it is to Matt Rhule.
So what is it then? What's the best case scenario for the Panthers? I don't mean vague stuff. I mean record. In your mind, what's the best thing the Panthers could hope for
this
year?
2-14 or 8-8. Anything in between, no, I shouldn't say that. Anything that is in between 2-14 or 7-9 is not going to be good for the Carolina Panthers unless there's a quarterback replacement in there, like Trey Lance falls to 5. But yes, it's 2-14 or 7-9. It's the extremes.
Which is possible. I mean, I don't know that the quarterbacks are going to go 1, 2, 3 in next year's draft. There's a ton of talent in that draft that I mean, it all depends on who needs a quarterback and stuff like that. But yeah, I don't think 2-14 is some sort of panic, or reason to panic if you're in Carolina. 2-14 isn't ideal. I think this team would love, I think 6-10, I'd be happy with it if I'm Carolina, so long as Teddy stays healthy and gives you reason to believe in him moving forward.
6-10 is not good.
I agree it's not good, but with this roster, I'd be thoroughly impressed with Matt Rhule if he pulled six games out of this team. Impressed.
Why do we feel like Brian Flores in his mission in Miami is successful?
Well, because they were winning by the end of the season.
Well, no, because they went 5-11, which, that's fine.
Isn't that my point?
Well, but the reason why it actually made sense and the reason why we actually like what Brian Flores did is they still ended up with Tua Tagovailoa.
Yeah, but that's why I say something in between 2-14 and 8-8 is still okay. I mean, they could go 6-10 and either say, because, okay, let's remember here, Teddy Bridgewater and Ryan Fitzpatrick, not the same guy. Fitzpatrick is almost 10 years older, complete journeyman, has never been viewed as a long-term starter anywhere. Teddy Bridgewater has a ceiling that's higher than Fitzpatrick, but nevertheless, there's a chance that if Bridgewater is the quarterback and they go 6-10 and they're sitting at 5 in the draft and there's a quarterback who they think is a franchise talent sitting there, they could take him. Of course that's possible. And they should consider that. They would be ignorant and naive not to consider that. But there are outcomes on this team. I don't think 2-14 is automatically the best case scenario for the Panthers. I know everybody thinks I'm Captain Tank over here, but yeah, I'd be okay.
I thought it was Lieutenant Tank.
I got promoted. I promoted myself. I can do that. You can do that when you're captain.
Between that and the Barrett Sports Media article, you're having a week, sir.
Yeah. So with the 2-14 stuff, I'm okay with that. But the 6-10 record or something in that range, I'd be fine with too, because I think this draft has enough good guys that are going to be top 5-6 prospects. And if you go 5-11, 6-10, you're probably drafting there anyway. I think there's enough players there where I'd be happy. I've said this before. I'd be happy with Micah Parsons. I would love Micah Parsons to be the next Luke Kuechly. Or the replacement for Luke Kuechly. I would love Penei Sewell. I would love Jamar Chase, who, by the way, just broke all kinds of records playing for the guy who's now calling plays in Carolina. That would be pretty nice as well. There's other guys other than QBs I would like, and if there's a QB sitting there, all the better. Take him, too, if that's what they think is best.
You really think after 6-10 you're still going to be on the Teddy Express?
Well, it depends on what the 6-10 looks like.
Yeah, I've seen a lot of teams. I've covered a lot of teams. They go 5-11, 6-10.
Well, yeah, you covered the Browns. They draft a quarterback every year.
Well, no, it's not just about them. I also spent time in Detroit covering them. Like, I've seen teams go 6-10, and this is not just a Cleveland or Detroit thing. It's very rare that you go 6-10 and everybody's like, you know, this Teddy Bridgewater guy's onto something.
When was the last time the Lions drafted a quarterback in the first round? They haven't drafted one since Stafford.
About it's about the record, Josh.
Lions go 6-10 a lot. That's my point.
But they also have Matt Stafford, a guy who was the former number one pick, mm-hmm. who's teased franchise potential, who's gotten them to the playoffs before. There's no history of that with Teddy Bridgewater.
Teddy Bridgewater's gotten teams to the playoffs before. It just wasn't Carolina.
Okay, but Matt Stafford was the reason they got to the playoffs
years.
I think Teddy Bridgewater was not the reason. I mean, he was good. I'm not saying he wasn't, but Teddy Bridgewater was a party to the success. He was not a reason for the success. Well,
again, this goes back to the fallacy that exists in the NFL that having a great quarterback is a requirement prerequisite for being a playoff team.
You made the Matt Stafford comparison. The reality is
Bridgewater and Stafford have the same number of playoff appearances.
But the point is they don't have the same entry point. They don't have the same expectations. And Matt Stafford is a much more talented, physically talented quarterback than Teddy Bridgewater. So it's not that it's outside the bounds of possibility, because the truth is the cool thing about this season is there's a lot of unknown. And while we assume the unknown is going to be a bad thing, you know, maybe some of these things shake the Panthers way, right? Maybe the lack of an offseason hurts everyone equally and doesn't just punish the Panthers. I don't think that's the way it's going to go, but maybe it does. Maybe Teddy Bridgewater's familiarity with Joe Brady helps both of them overcome the unknowns of them in Carolina. But when we talk about a team going 5-11 and 6-10, it's just tough for me to think that at the end of that season, everyone's going to go, okay, let's keep investing, or let's forsake all other options. We're certain on Teddy Bridgewater.
They don't need to be certain. I think that's the part of the argument I don't agree with, is they don't need to be certain. They signed Teddy to a 3-year deal. And if they decide after this season and they go into the draft, they say, all right, we're not 100% locked in on Teddy, but we've got another year. We've actually got 2 years if we wanted, but we've got another year with Teddy. We know that Teddy can win if we help, you know, supply him with the protection that he needs and a better defense. And we say, all right, we're sitting here with the 5th pick in the draft. All right, we like Trey Lance. We're not 100% sold that Lance is for whatever reason. I'm not even making up my own evaluation. I'm saying, all right, Lance is on the board at 5. We like the kid, but we're not sold on the kid. All right, but here's this Parsons guy. This Parsons guy can be the fixture in the middle of our defense, we think, for the next 10 years. We have him graded higher than we do Lance. We like Bridgewater. We know we have a big gap at linebacker, or maybe it's left tackle. Maybe we say, man, this Penei Sewell kid, we haven't had a cornerstone left tackle in almost a decade since Jordan Gross walked out the door. We like Bridgewater. We don't know if we're 100% sold on the quarterback, so why don't we give Bridgewater another year? Because there's going to be another Trey Lance a year from now. It's not like Trey Lance is a guy that comes along once every 10 years. I wouldn't even say that about Justin Fields either. I think Fields is good, but I don't think Fields is some sort of guy that you cater your whole franchise to and give up picks or whatever it might take. So we like those guys, but let's go give Teddy that cornerstone left tackle. Or let's go get our middle of our defense, our Micah Parsons, who can maybe be our next Luke Kuechly. That is possible. All I'm saying is it's on the table. You're saying that they're not going to have any confidence in Teddy, so pull the plug. That may not necessarily be true. All options will be on the table. Unless the Panthers go 9-7 this year, I don't think anybody is going to talk about Teddy Bridgewater as the locked in stone, write it down in blood. He is the franchise quarterback moving forward. But the options are still on the table in the event that something happens in the middle of that, in between a 2-14 season and let's call it 8-8.
Ambiguity at quarterback is death in the NFL. That's such a slippery slope of, well, let's give him another year. You know, it's not just about drafting a guy to say you draft a guy and this is going to be the future. It's also about installing that guy and understanding that the clock starts with that guy, it restarts with that guy, and it still might be 3 years before that guy puts you in a position to win. Because, we're talking about it with 5 of the 6 quarterbacks in the first round of the 2018 draft, where one guy is a mostly proven commodity in Lamar Jackson. What the hell is Baker Mayfield? What the hell is Sam Darnold? What the hell is Josh Allen? What the hell is Josh Rosen? That to me is the other part of this.
Aren't you arguing against yourself by doing that, though? Like, because 5 of the 6 teams that took quarterbacks 2 years ago right now aren't sure if that's going to be their guy 2 years from now. So wouldn't it stand to reason that if you know you have a quarterback who maybe has a slightly lower ceiling than the best of the best in the league, but his floor is also relatively high, shouldn't you be a little bit more patient with someone like that and go draft players at the other positions? Because let's face it, Drew Brees, Aaron Rodgers are great. They're not getting their team to the Super Bowl on their own. They have to have great rosters around them. I would like to address the other 52 spots on the team. I mean, there's other guys on the team I like. It's not literally 52, but I would like to build my football team rather than just throw darts at a quarterback when you know as well as I do, you got at best a 50-50 chance of that guy being any good.
I don't think they should draft a quarterback to draft a quarterback, if that's what you're asking.
I agree.
But if you think a guy's a franchise quarterback, you don't pass up on him for a middle linebacker. God bless Luke Kuechly. I wouldn't have passed up on a franchise quarterback for Luke Kuechly. One of the if not the best player in franchise history, one of the best franchise players, would not have done it. If I think a guy's a franchise quarterback, that's the thing. Left tackles, you can find everywhere. You can develop guys. You can find guys all everywhere. You can even find quarterbacks everywhere. But if you have a chance at a franchise quarterback in the NFL, you take that big swing and you live with the results.
Yeah, but did you hear what I said? I said if they're not 100% convinced that that's their guy. You and I agree. If there's a quarterback who you think, hey, this dude is it, then sure. But I don't know that Lance or Fields are that guy, and it doesn't matter what I think. It matters what the Panthers think. But that's where you go. You run into issues making selections is when you draft a guy, even if you're not 100% convinced he's the right guy for the job.
We call that either a Cleveland Brown or an Arizona Cardinal, depending on what time zone you are in. USA Today has the Panthers going 2-14 in their projections. The Panthers go 2-14 if... Finish that sentence, and I've got something to say about the NBA's draft lottery and the Hornets' chances next on Sports Radio FNZ.
you know, I think it's very dangerous to look at this roster and think about needs, because Mitch has signaled so clearly that, you know, roster balance right now is not his priority. I do think that Wiseman or Avia definitely address areas where they really need help.
Sports Radio FNZ, that was Rick Bunnell from the clubhouse earlier this week, and his thoughts on the Hornets heading into the draft lottery. Of course, this tonight, Josh, and I got a feeling.
You do?
I got a feeling.
That tonight's going to be a good night.
I've never shared this on air. I have some sensitivities to the ethereal world. Right? I have some premonitions occasionally.
But Hacked on Phonics was on Wednesdays.
No. That's a different bit. I have a feeling. I've been having tinglings all day. This is not a health issue, by the way, just letting everybody know. There's no stage of a heart attack going on right now. No, I've had a bit of a premonition. I'm going to go ahead and call it right now. I'm going to put them on the line. I'm going to say what I think is going to happen. The Hornets are going to be getting a top three pick tonight.
Well, it would just be so fitting that in a year where most people view it as a weak draft, that the Hornets get a top three pick. So, yeah, why the heck not? Let's do it.
Listen, I understand the stats. I saw the tweet earlier today. Since re-entering the NBA in 2004, the Bobcats Hornets draft position has stayed the same 10 times and worsened 5 times. Right now, they can only get picks 1 through 4 or picks 8 through 8 through 12, I believe it is. I'm going to say right now, I'm actually, they're going to have a top two pick. I'm going to go one step further.
I think it's 10, right? Because only they three teams can jump them. So they're 8, 9, well, I guess 11. Yeah, either way.
It is 11.
Yeah, 11. That makes sense. I was doing the math in real time.
But I think it's going to happen this year, and I think we're finally going to have something to be excited about with the Charlotte Hornets. I've called it right now.
I hope so. I hope you're right. It's about time that they had some good luck come their way on lottery night. I mean, this is a weird year, and maybe the weirdness is going to continue tonight, because this is a franchise that has been kicked in the groin year after year on lottery night or on draft night, or we come to find out years later that they screwed it up on draft night. Mitch Kupchak deserves none of the blame for the Hornets' draft woes. What he has done the last couple of years in drafting is incredibly strong. Now, would I have preferred Tyler Herro instead of P.J. Washington? Probably. Would I have preferred Shea Gilgeous-Alexander over Miles Bridges? Yes. Would I have preferred Michael Porter Jr. over Miles Bridges? Yes. But Miles Bridges and P.J. Washington are good players, are good young prospects at the very least. So he's done a good job drafting. He found Devontae Graham. Mitch Kupchak's done a good job. So if you can get Mitch Kupchak into the top three of this draft, that could be huge. And, you know, last year, the Memphis Grizzlies sat with the 8th best odds to land the number one pick. And because they've reformatted the lottery where you're a little less likely, they flatten the odds at the top. You're less likely to get the number one pick with the worst record. And there's a trickle down. So the teams in the Hornets range actually have a slightly better chance, not necessarily to get to number one, but to get into the top three. Last year, Memphis got to number two. They drafted Ja Morant, who is better than anybody in this draft, but they drafted Ja Morant, and Morant helped them get to the brink of the playoffs as a rookie. So,
and the Pelicans were one spot ahead.
They were seventh.
The Lakers were 11th, and they got the fourth pick. I mean, listen, I can understand why people look at this and say, well, it's not a great draft at the top. You know, will it really matter? Yes, because you want to be able to pick the guy that you think has the best chance. You don't want to pick the guy who you think has the second best chance. You want to be able to get your guy. And I think one of the reasons why it's not as good of a draft up top is there's just so much unknown. If James Wiseman had been able to play a full season at Memphis, I think we'd feel better about what's at the top of the draft. Or guys like LaMelo Ball, guys like RJ Hampton, if they had been able to play in college and we had been able to see them up against a level of competition we maybe have a better context for, I think we might be a little bit more excited, you know, to win the number one pick if that's what transpires this year.
No, it's true. There's a handful of guys in the top 10 of this year's draft, we expect, that either played overseas or, in the case of Wiseman, only played a handful of games. There is a great deal of unpredictability with the draft in 2 months. I mean, the draft lottery tonight, we'll see what happens. Again, to echo your point about why the Hornets need to draft as high as possible, that's true no matter what. But Charlotte, even though Devontae Graham, I think, has emerged as a bona fide starting point guard in the league, he's not going anywhere. He's arrived. I think PJ Washington has a Paul Millsap type ceiling to his game, which is, I would say, a third or fourth best player on a really good team. I think that's where PJ could be. They need talent. They need an influx of talent. I like some of the young pieces. I like McDaniels. I like the Martin twins. They've got some pieces that you could see. All right, these guys could be rotation dudes in the league, but where is that top end talent? Because I don't think it's PJ. I really don't think it's Miles. I like Miles in certain spots, but I don't think Miles has face of the franchise, go-to scorer type potential. I just don't see that in him. So where is that guy going to be? And LaMelo Ball, as you mentioned, is a polarizing prospect for a number of reasons. We know the name. We know the dad. We know the family. The game is great in some areas. It's severely lacking in others. Anthony Edwards is a kid out of Georgia who, in a lot of ways, is kind of like a Markelle Fultz, where really talented, but why didn't they win in college? That's a concern. And then there's some other guys that you really don't know about, like a Killian Hayes out of France, who's been a late riser in the process, and now some people view him as a potential number one pick. James Wiseman, who I've liked since the beginning, I've thought that's the perfect guy for the Charlotte Hornets, is a dude that only played a handful of games in college, but I would still take him if they had the chance. So we'll see tonight. But if Charlotte can get into the top three, that is obviously great news. That's not a shocking analysis there, but I think that they just need to draft the best possible player. So get as high as you can in the draft and see who that guy is.
Yeah, I love the idea. Listen, there are going to be times, hopefully in the near future, where the draft is going to be more of a needs-based proposition. It ain't now. You know, Anthony Edwards, well, you mentioned the concerns. Man, I'd love to watch him and Devontae Graham play in the same backcourt. Obi Toppin, who I know some people might think of as a redundancy, if he ends up, listen, if he's the best player on your board, take him and figure the roster out as you go. If that means you have to make a trade of Miles Bridges in the future, you have to make a trade in the future. I think you just got to go out there and take a big swing. And listen, here's the other thing. If you get the number one pick, I also don't think the Hornets, there's going to be excitement from us. Okay, we're going to be jacked up if they do get the number one pick. I don't think it means you have to keep it either if you think there is a potential deal out there. I'm not talking for Gary Harris, whom I loved coming out of college and who's coming off a rough year. I'm talking about if you can swing a trade that can jumpstart the franchise by a year or two, I'm okay with that too.
Yeah, I think it's going to be tough for them in a year like this to deal the pick. There's a lot of moving parts here, so I don't even want to get into all the different possibilities, but the draft being weaker at the top certainly doesn't help. It makes the pick less valuable in some people's eyes around the NBA. The next year's draft is going to be stronger. 2 or 3 years down the road, people are projecting could be one of the best drafts ever, deepest drafts ever. So I think the Hornets, in that sense, they might have missed out on the luck of the draw if they end up getting into the top one or two spots, because I don't think the pick has as much trade value as it has had in the past. But, you know, the thing the Hornets need to draft, and this echoes what I was saying a minute ago, is they need to draft with 2025 in mind, not 2021. This is not about how does this guy fit within the framework of what we have right now? Because the Hornets right now have a great pull-up jump shooting point guard who's also a great distributor but is undersized and not a great defender. They've got a nice supplemental guard who's a secondary ball handler who can be your scorer if when you're rotating your two lead guards. He can be that point guard when Devontae Graham's off the floor. And then you have two athletic, switchable front court guys, one of which I think is a much more versatile player in PJ Washington. He's a better defender. He's a better shooter. He's the guy you build around. And then you have Miles. To me, Obi Toppin is basically, if they draft Obi Toppin, go ahead and send Miles Bridges packing. And I don't mean immediately, but if you're drafting Toppin, you're basically drafting Miles Bridges 2.0. You're drafting a 6'9", 6'10" guy who has some kind of range, but is a great offensive player when he gets downhill, good athlete, played 2 years in college. Like it's Miles Bridges all over again. I'm not saying that's necessarily a bad thing, but I would almost rather go in a different direction. I always say draft the best player, and if they think Toppin's the best player, that's fine. But I do think Miles Bridges is already the most tradable piece that the Hornets have, that would make him even more tradable down the road if they drafted a guy like Obi Toppin. Now, there's other guys out there that I would rather see come to Charlotte unless they feel like they can get good value for Miles Bridges in the next year and a half.
Yeah, I think the thing I would say about Toppin is, one, he and Bridges are the exact same age, which is interesting because Toppin is one of the older draft picks,
right,
or draft prospects. The only thing is he is a better shooter. I think there's a higher upside. I do understand that they are somewhat redundant, and that means we might miss out on whatever the upside Miles Bridges tends to be. But if you can find the better player who is the better shooter and maybe can do additional things that Miles can't do, then I just am not married to any position. As a matter of fact, the thing that scares me about getting the number one pick is the idea of you take Wiseman because he fills a need. I take Wiseman if you think he's the best player, but don't do it because, well, you need a guy. And I feel the same way about the kid out of USC, the big out of USC.
Onyeka Okongwu, yeah. Okongwu is another guy that, to me, he's a more refined Biombo. Like, he's not Bismack, so I don't want to go there. But that's kind of the role, is this big, physical, athletic, defensive-minded guy who is more athletic, I think, than Biombo was. But that's sort of what I see. Yeah, I mean, look, Toppin, like you said, if you're drafting Toppin, you're basically just getting a similar version of Miles and getting, now you're restarting the clock at that spot on your roster in terms of a rookie contract. I would not say whether they draft Toppin or not, and whoever they draft tonight, whoever they draft in a couple of months. I think Miles Bridges is a guy I have my eye on as a potential trade piece in the next year because they've got PJ who they like. Miles was very inconsistent early in the year, started to come around and play very well by the end of the season. But at some point, Charlotte's going to have to try to cash in on some of the young talent and try to see if they can flip it and get a little bit better. Whether that's a top draft pick, top three draft pick, or something like that, or a great veteran player, at some point they're going to have to get that guy. If they think Miles Bridges has more value as a trade asset than he does as a wing on this team, I don't think I would put it past them to consider making that move. So I would keep an eye on that, but as far as tonight goes, get as high as you can. Hopefully they get James Wiseman, because I think that's the guy. I think that is Joel Embiid without the attitude problems, and that'd be the guy I would take.
It is the NBA draft lottery tonight. We'll see where the Hornets pick, but again, I'm calling it now. They will have, I'm going to go back to top three pick. I'm trying to constantly feel what my ESP is saying, and I'm saying they're going to have a top three pick in this year's draft. They will be like the Pelicans. They will be like the Grizzlies of last year. And the process wasn't perfect, but the understanding of the process was far worse. Sports Radio FNZ.